Hello, Chris. Thanks for joining us for the first ever phone interview on The Long View. Please tell us about your background. What was it about your education and personal experiences that shaped your interest in economics and policy?
Well, first of all, my parents got me involved in political issues from a very young age. When I was 9, I was out in demonstrations against the Vietnam War, seeing Martin Luther King, and so on. And that kind of thing made a big impression on me. So from an early age, I was concerned about social and political issues. When I went to college, I got more involved in some of these issues, and it was sort of a natural transition from that to study economics and then to focus on the economic policy and economic development issues.
Well, that's interesting. What is your father's vocation?
Well, my father's a sociologist, my mother's a historian, and both of them definitely had an influence on my way of looking at things. My sisters and I and my mom and dad would always be talking about ideas around the dinner table. We'd be talking about current events. So even when I was a kid, this was part of, you know, this was our daily bread. And certainly as I got older and began to understand what their work was about, they were studying social movements, they were studying protest, they were studying the rise of capitalism in Europe. And, you know, these were pretty weighty subjects and, really influenced my way of thinking about the world.
It sounds as though you lived abroad?
It's a hard question to answer because I was born in France, and then by the time I went to college, I had moved 12 times. It included 2 stays in France, 1 stay in Canada. The rest was various locations around the United States. But basically, my dad was sort of an academic nomad. He had a number of jobs, but he also, it seemed like every time there was a possibility for a fellowship or a visiting professorship, he said yes.
Yeah.
So we jumped around a lot.
Oh, that sounds really, really interesting, actually. Now, to get right to RESD is less than a decade old, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Where were you teaching before RESD?
I was teaching in the College of Management.
Aha. Uh-huh. Now, what inspired you to want to depart from the MBA program?
Well, what happened is that there were a number of us who were teaching in the College of Management who were interested in broader public policy issues and regional development issues, and we began to hook up with other people around the campus from lots of different departments, history, sociology, political science, as well as economics, and psychology. And the university was defining a mission that involved helping the region to develop, and we were excited about the mission. We were sort of trying to figure out what the university could do to play a role in this. And at a certain point, we realized we were having a lot more fun, having a lot more interesting discussions with each other than any of us was having in our home departments. And we realized that there was an affinity here that it really made sense to build on, that rather than saying, I'm an economist, I focus on economic issues, it was, hey, we're all of us here at the table here are interested in regional development. Is there a way that we can sort of institutionalize that and build a framework where we can pursue these questions?
Well, having worked with the professors and taken most of the classes, it's a pretty amazing and interesting group of people, I have to say. You know, also from personal experience, I can attest to how rewarding involvement in RESD is. But I'm going to leave it to you to provide us with a synopsis of the program at large, Chris. I mean, what sort of subjects are taught, and what kind of research can students expect to be doing in the program?
Well, I think it would actually help to say what we think of as development, because that then shapes what subjects get taught. So that when we say development, sometimes people say development, what they really mean is growth, you know, having more stuff or more stuff per person. And that can certainly be a part of development, but when we say development, and, you know, when a lot of people say development, what we mean is increasing people's capacity to meet their own needs.
Mm-hmm.
So if growth is happening, but it's not being matched with a set of, you know, increasing people's control over their economic and political and social lives, that's not really development.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is that whereas in some places development might be thought of as an economic phenomenon, we're seeing it as something that cuts across lots of different aspects of human life. So we teach courses on economics, meaning, you know, the markets, the buying and selling of things. But most importantly, the most important market out there is the labor market,
mm-hmm.
So jobs. And that's one aspect of it. But we also look at sociology. What are the organizations and social units that people interact in, and how do those get stronger, how do they work together better. We look at politics, the power relations between different groups of people, and how do communities strengthen their power to determine their own destiny. And we look at history, which is basically looking at all these things over the long haul, and particularly focusing on labor and business history.
Mm-hmm.
And we really feel like you got to put all those pieces together to understand how to make development work. One saying that I like to say is that in the name regional economic and social development, the most important word is and, that it's not just economic development, it's not just social development, it's the combination of these different kinds of development
mm-hmm.
that makes something work or not work.
Right, right. Well, since you started to define the word development in terms of RESD, does it mean something different when it's applied to a neighborhood, say a neighborhood in Lowell, as opposed to a city, for example, or a region like New England?
Well, I would say that the concept is the same. The concept has to do with again, increasing capacity, increasing people's ability to meet their needs, to shape their own lives in a way that they, you know, that they would hope to be heading. I think the strategies are going to look different as you look at a neighborhood versus a city versus a region versus what could be, you know, an entire country or a multi-country region. You can talk about the region of North America, Canada, United States, Mexico as a single region now integrated economically. What's the strategy there? And as you get bigger and bigger, you get more and more diversified, and that in some ways gives you a wider range of strategies to use, but it also makes the whole thing more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking at a neighborhood, not that much happens in a single neighborhood. People live there. There's, you know, small neighborhood businesses and so on. But a neighborhood is mainly a social unit and a political unit, in the sense that they may elect a city councilor or at least can be involved in the electoral process, or for that matter, the political protest process if they choose to.
Mm-hmm.
Neighborhood's not really an economic unit, but if you start going up to, for example, a metropolitan area, that's a meaningful economic unit.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, people commute to jobs within that area, there's a set of industries, and you can start talking about the economics of the region. As you get to the level of a country, then you've got a much more diversified set of industries.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you're also talking about the importance of dealing with regional differences within that country. What do you do about the fact that the South is poorer than the North, or that rural areas are depressed in a particular country? So the questions are different, but I think the basic concept of development doesn't change that much as you go from one level to another.
I see. Okay. Well, from what sorts of disciplines are your graduate students, me being one of them, as we all know? I mention RESD from time to time, and so does Dan Toomey, the producer of Thinking Out Loud. There's quite a diversity of students, different backgrounds, different degrees. Can you elaborate on that a little?
Well, most people come from the social sciences, economic, sociology, political science, psychology, some from history, but that doesn't completely exhaust where people come from. And interestingly, we've just worked out bachelor's master's agreements with the Department of Philosophy and the Department of Environmental, Earth, and Atmospheric Sciences.
Oh, that's great.
Which are a little further afield. And we have had people who've come from a science or engineering background. We have what we sometimes call the high-tech refugees, people who've been working in the high-tech companies and either got laid off or just got burned out and decided they wanted to do something different, wanted to do something that would give back to the community and to the region, and came to do this. So people come from a diversity of backgrounds, but I would say the majority come from either a social science or a history background.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the study paths that develop for RESD students as a result of their former degrees and professional experiences? I mean, once they get to RESD, say their background was political science or maybe environmental sciences, how does that translate in the program itself?
The program is very individualized, so people can really take different paths. I think that we have a lot of students from other countries who either come directly from another country to study, or more often it's people who are part of the large number of immigrants in our region who are looking to advance their education. And a lot of them are still very concerned about their home country. So they might pick a course of study that focuses very much on, you know, what's happening in poorer countries, what strategies are relevant there, what are the environmental concerns there, what are the jobs concerns there, and you can put together a curriculum focusing on that.
Mm-hmm.
There are others who come and are thinking about Lowell and Lawrence issues of the inner city and are building a program around that.
Mm-hmm.
There are other people who are coming who are environmentalists. So there's not by any means a single path. And, you know, at some point we made a list of seven different concentrations. There's a global one, there's an environmental one, there's a gender one, there's a community development one. But I think what's more meaningful is to say that we really have a range of things to offer and people figure it out for themselves. And part of what's exciting is that, you know, people change their minds. They come in, they have an experience in a course or working with a community group, and they go in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody may have come in to thinking that they're going to, I'm going to work on my home country in Africa, and then get very excited about community organizing among African immigrants in the Lowell area.
Right,
and go in a completely different direction.
Yeah. You know, truly, the educational components are challenging and interesting, but the student body is fascinating. Your graduates come from all over the world and offer a diversity of experience and perspective. I mean, from Kenya to Denmark, Mexico to Lebanon. I only wish I had more time to spend with everyone while I was there. What have you learned from the students yourself, Chris? What stories have they shared that have inspired your work over the years?
Well, there are so many stories that I think the best way to try to summarize it is just that there's actually at least four different types of things that I feel like I've learned from students. One is, as you say, they're from all over the world. And so when Ellen Johnson Sirleaf got elected president of Liberia, I could actually talk to some Liberian students and say, what does this mean to you? You know, is she going to have a chance to turn things around in this country that's had a terrible civil war?
Mm-hmm.
And so on. That's just one example. It's a window onto parts of the world that I don't know much about, and that's very exciting. A second thing is the kinds of connections that students build with the community. So having a student who's working with the Cambodian Mutual Assistance Association and talking to me about the kinds of issues that Cambodian elders are facing in terms of health, language barriers, economic security, housing conditions, and so on. And so, again, that's a set of windows to things that are going on in areas around here that I otherwise would have no idea about. There's just the fact that students are doing research on dozens of different areas. I had a student, Brian Toomey, who went to work he was researching the temp industry, went to work as a day laborer at Labor Ready for a week as part of his capstone research
mm-hmm.
for the program. And so all of a sudden, I had all these stories of what it was like to work at Labor Ready and the homeless guys he was working next to and the way they got cheated on their pay. It was quite mind-blowing. Or Jose Luis Alvarez, I was doing research, and he was my research assistant on looking at what's happening with Walmart in Mexico. Walmart's now the biggest private business in Mexico, just like it is in the United States.
Hmm.
And so Jose Luis sort of dug up lots of interesting information about Walmart and the other retailers in Mexico. So there's a set of research windows. And then the last thing, and in some ways this is where the real stories happen, is just seeing the paths that people have taken and the struggles that they've gone through to be in RESD. So that you have students who are the first in their family to go to college, in some cases many for whom it's the first in their family to go beyond the bachelor's degree. You've got the burned out engineers that I mentioned before. You've
mm-hmm.
got retirees who are going back to school. You've got moms whose kids are getting older. Lots of different paths, and all of them are here because they want to give something back to the community. And that just makes me feel great.
Right.
To me, it's really rewarding that people are here and working hard because they actually want to do something that will make a difference.
Let me add to that. That's really true about the professors as well. There's a lot of heart in the program, and what you see, what you observe in the students, you observe in the professors. And that makes it cool. Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to reel it into local economic development. You know, on the long view, we try to address some local topics. I know that our listeners are interested in their neighborhood. So, Chris, do you have theories about what would more efficiently develop the economy in the greater Lowell region? And how can UMass Lowell participate in this development?
Well, I don't think that I have any magic bullet to develop Lowell. I don't think that UMass Lowell has any magic bullet to develop Lowell. I think the most important thing in development, again, going back to this notion that it's increasing people's capacity to meet their own needs, is that it involves really deepening people's involvement in the development process. That means people need to be more educated about what's going on in their community. It means that they need to have more understanding of the economic issues, and that as city planners, city boosters, and so on are working the development process, that they take into account the kinds of resources and strengths that every part of the community brings to the table.
Yeah.
That's not easy, but in some ways, university is very well suited to contribute to that process. We're educators. We're communicators. And what I'm talking about is a process of education and increasing communication. And I think that's something that we can do. We can, obviously not everybody in Lowell is going to go through UMass Lowell or even through a single class in UMass Lowell. But by training that group of people who can be leaders in this process is one really important function. And I'm just thinking, in RESD, our graduates include the downtown development coordinator for Lowell, but also a community organizer at the Coalition for a Better Acre at the very grassroots level.
Mm-hmm.
And we're proud that we're training people to sort of go into different positions who may even be at odds sometimes. They may be on different sides of a debate, but they're bringing some of the concepts and tools for understanding development to bear on this. A second is educating people in the sense of just bringing information to the debate, producing reports that are accessible, understandable to policymakers and to ordinary people, getting stuff out like you do on the radio and other media that helps people break down these issues that seem complicated and help people understand it. Not only help people understand the issues, but help people realize that, yeah, they can understand the issues. It's not just something to leave to the experts. Development is too important to leave to the experts.
Mm-hmm.
Development is for everybody, and if everybody doesn't get involved, that development is not going to reflect all the diverse things that the community has to offer.
Right, right. Before we wind this up, can you recommend any particular sources for further learning around this subject or fact-checking, as we like to encourage on the long view? Any particular websites, besides the RESD website, of course?
Well, I mean, the RESD website is good because you can go to the course syllabi, and if you're interested in a particular topic, there will be a listing of readings, and a lot of times there's even web links for the reading. So that's one thing to use on the RESD website. But some of my favorite websites, the ones I use a lot, there's the Economic Policy Institute, which is a left-of-center U.S. economic policy-focused website.
Mm-hmm.
That's epinet.org. The U.S. government websites are tremendously valuable in terms of getting the basic information. So census.gov, census.gov, or stats.bls.gov is the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Those
right.
are two websites I just use all the time. Econdata.net is a great guide to a wide range of economic data that are relevant for the development process. For thinking about some of the things that affect the developing world, I have worked for many years with Grassroots International, based here in Boston, and their website, grassrootsonline, all one word, .org, is a nice starting point for some of those questions that you might have about developing countries and the issues that come up there.
That's great, yeah. Well, I have a link on the Longview website directly to RESD. It's kind of always sits there in the right-hand corner. And also, I think in the content of at least this week's main page, I'll put some of those links that you just mentioned right at the front there.
Actually, let me throw out one more.
Okay.
I'm sorry, you got me on a roll here.
No, that's great.
I mean, another organization I've worked for a long time is Dollars and Cents, which puts out Dollars and Cents magazine. And it's a popular economics magazine, has a lot of coverage of current economic events, and makes it very understandable. And that's dollarsandcents, SENSE.org.
Excellent. Well, Chris, thanks for your time. This was really interesting.
Well, it was a pleasure to be with you.
And would you consider returning again and talking more about economics and policy?
I'd be happy to do it. I feel like we've just started to scratch the surface.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, have a great day, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, take care.
Thanks.